has cut each piece of chicken in half to make sure it's cooked through. I seriously don't want to kill anyone.
Are you doubting me?
Kyle asked, offended. Definitely. I took a tentative bite, and it was pretty good. It wasn't undercooked. In fact, some of the edges were a little dry, or the paste hadn't covered it all. But it was edible. Considering that I'd only done a fraction of the work, I was maybe a little too proud. We ate, sharing pieces of the asparagus that hadn't turned out too bad, though I genuinely worried I might be sick later. Finally, I'd had enough. I'm ready for dessert. Henry chuckled in understanding and went over to where his pastries were cooling on a rack. With careful movements, only using the edges of his fingers, even though the rolls seemed firm, he transferred them all to a plate and set them in front of us.
Is korva pusti,
he said, giving the dish a name. Then, taking my hand, he gave me a very important speech. I could tell by the intensity in his eyes. I wished so badly that I could understand him on my own. When he finished, Eric smiled and turned to me.
Korva pusti is one of Henry's favorite things to prepare as well as eat. He says that if you do not like it, you should send him home tonight, for he's sure your relationship could not survive if you aren't as in love with this as he is.
Fox laughed at my shocked face, but Henry nodded, assuring me he meant it. I took a deep breath and picked up one of the delicately rolled pastries. Here goes nothing. Right away, I could taste the cinnamon. There was something else in there that reminded me of grapefruit, but I knew that wasn't it. It was deliciously sweet, but more than it being a fantastic recipe, I could tell it was made by a fantastic chef. Henry had poured himself into this, and I was willing to bet part of that was for me, but I thought it was mostly for himself, that he couldn't allow himself to make it anything less than incredible. I was blown away. It's perfect, Henry. The others grabbed pieces and shoved them into their mouths, grunting in approval. My mom would be dying right now. She has such a sweet tooth, I said. Kyle was nodding with his eyes wide. He knew how she was about desserts. This is great, Henry. Nice job to you too, Eric. Eric shook his head.
I barely helped. Was this rigged?
Burke asked, his mouth half full with the pastry. We all looked at him confused.
I mean, I came up with this idea, and then Henry jumped in on it just to show the rest of us up.
His face was turning red, and that feeling of unease was filling the room again. Fox put a hand on his shoulder.
Calm down, man. It's just a cinnamon roll.
Burke shrugged it off and threw the rest of his dessert across the room.
I would have done way better if you weren't there screwing me up the whole time.
Fox made a face.
Hey, you were the one standing there talking about how hot she was when you should have been watch.
Burke threw a punch that knocked Fox back several steps. I sucked in a breath, frozen. Fox came back at him, and I was pushed to the floor by Burke's arm, pulling back for another punch.
Whoa!
Kyle jumped over me and started pulling at Burke, while Henry was yelling at Fox in Finnish. After everything with Jack, my new instinct was to get back up and throw a punch. No one was going to hurt me and get away with it. And I might have tried, if it wasn't for one thing. Eric, the quiet observer, had launched himself over the table to pick me up.
Come,
he said. I wasn't particularly a fan of obeying orders, but he said it so urgently, I followed. Chapter 24. Eric rushed me up the stairs and into the dining hall. Everyone else in the palace was in the middle of their dinner, and the room felt too loud.
Edlin?
Daddy called, but Eric kept me moving, somehow knowing that I couldn't bear to stay there. He only paused when we got to the end of the room, and just long enough to pass along the problem.
Pardon me, officer. Some of the selected are in a fight in the kitchen. It's very physical, and it looked to be escalating. Thank you.
The officer motioned to two other guards, and they followed him as he ran toward the fray. I realized I was hugging myself,
both frightened and enraged. Eric gently placed a hand on my back and ushered me away. My parents were calling after me, but I couldn't deal with that many people right now, surrounding me, asking questions. He slowed and asked me quietly,
"Where do you want to go?"
"My room."
"Lead the way."
He didn't touch me exactly, except for the occasional brush against my back, which made me realize he must have kept his hand there the whole time, inches away from me, just in case. I pushed open my door and Nina was inside, polishing the table, filling the room with the scent of lemons.
"My lady?"
I held up a hand.
"Maybe go get her some tea," Eric offered.
She nodded and rushed away. I walked over to my bed and took a few deep breaths. Eric stood there, calm and silent.
"I've never seen anything like that," I confessed.
He got down on a knee so he was level with me. "My father has never so much as swatted my hand, and he's always taught us to seek peaceful resolutions. Kyle and I gave up trying to fight each other before we could really talk." I remembered this all with a laugh. "When we were down there, all I could think about was how I ran from Jack. Burke knocked me to the ground, and this time I was going to fight back. But I just realized I'd have no idea how to do it." Eric smiled.
"Henry says, when you're upset, the look in your eyes is as strong as a punch. You're not powerless."
I ducked my head, thinking of how I told myself over and over that no one in the world was as powerful as me. There was truth to it, sure. But if Jack had pinned me to the ground, or Burke had turned his fists on me, my crown would have done me no good until after the fact. I could punish, but I couldn't prevent.
"You know, boy or girl, I think aggression is a sign of weakness. I'm always more impressed when people can end something with words."
His eyes were seeing another place and time when he went on.
"Maybe that's why language became so important to me. My father, he always used to say, 'Iko, words are weapons. They are all you need.'"
"Iko?" I asked. He grinned, a little embarrassed.
E-I-K-K-O. Like I said, Eric is the closest in English.
"I like it. Really." He turned his attention back to me, looking at my arms.
"Are you hurt?"
"Oh, I don't think so." I felt a little sore from hitting the ground, but it was nothing serious. I just can't believe how fast it happened.
"I don't want to excuse either of them at all. That was unacceptable. But I hear the guys talking and they're stressed. They all want to impress you, but they have no idea how to do it, considering who you are. Some talk about trying to undermine others without getting caught. A few are working out at every turn to be physically superior. I understand that it's a lot of pressure, and that's probably why Burke snapped. But that will never make it okay."
"I'm so sorry you have to be around that." He shrugged.
"It's fine. Mostly I just stick with Henry and Kyle. Sometimes Hale, and they're good company. Not that I'd ever try to choose for you, but the three of them are a pretty safe place to start."
I smiled. "I think you're right. Though I hadn't spent one-on-one time with everyone yet, I already knew Hale was a good guy. And seeing Henry so excited about his food tonight, about this part of his life, gave me a glimpse of the person behind the barrier. And Kyle, well, I didn't know what to make of Kyle. But he was a better companion than I'd given him credit for. "Would you tell Henry for me how wonderful his food was? I could tell how important it was to him, and I admire his passion."
"I will, happily."
I extended my hand and he gave me his, resting them both on my knee. "Thank you so much for this. You really went above and beyond tonight, and I'm so thankful you were here."
"It's the least I could do."
I tilted my head, really looking at him. It felt like something had just happened, but I didn't know what it was. Eric, without knowing me, had done so much right. He pulled me away before I made the situation worse, got me to solitude before I lost control of my emotions, and stayed with me, listening to my worries and making everything better with his words. There were scores of people on call, ready to do whatever I asked. It was so funny to me that with him, I didn't even have to ask. I won't forget this, Aiko. Not ever. There was a tiny lift of a smile at the sound of his given name, and he squeezed my hand ever so slightly. I remembered the feeling of my first date with Hale, how I felt when I was sure he'd peeled everything back and had seen the real me. This time, I felt like I was on the other side of that, looking past duty and worry and rank, seeing the true heart of a person. And his was so beautiful. Nina came back in carrying a tray, and Eric and I ripped our hands apart.
Are you all right, my lady?
Yes, Nina, I promised her, standing. There was a fight, but Eric got me away. I'm sure the guards will come with a report soon. In the meantime, I just need to calm down.
The tea will help. I got some chamomile. And we'll get you into something comfortable before you need to report anywhere,
Nina said, already making my night easier by planning it. I turned back to Eric, who was standing by the door. He bowed deeply.
Good night, Your Highness.
Good night.
He walked away quickly, and Nina came over, handing me a cup of tea. The strange thing was, my hands were already so warm. About an hour later, I met Mom and Dad in the office to discuss what had happened.
Sir Fox looks pretty bad, a guard relayed. Sir Henry tried to pull him away, but Sir Burke was practically unstoppable. Both Sir Henry and Sir Kyle got some marks simply from trying to separate them.
How bad? I asked.
Sir Henry has a bruise on his chest and a cut just above his eye. Sir Kyle's lip was busted open, and there aren't any big scars besides that, but he feels sore from trying to contain Sir Burke. You can stop calling him Sir, Dad insisted. Burke is leaving right now. The same for Fox.
Maxon, reconsider. Fox didn't do anything, Mom urged. I agree it was inappropriate, but don't make that choice on Edlin's behalf.
I will,
he yelled.
We did this to bring our people joy, to give our daughter a chance at the same happiness we have. And since it began, she's been assaulted twice. I will not have monsters like that under my roof.
He finished his speech, slamming his fist into a side table, knocking his tea onto the floor. I stiffened, gripping the arms of my chair.
Daddy, stop,
I pleaded, my words hushed with fear I might somehow make it worse. He looked over his shoulder at me, as if he only now realized Mom and I were still in the room. His eyes instantly softened, and he turned away, shaking his head. After a deep breath, he straightened his suit and spoke to the guard.
Before anything continues, I expect thorough background checks on each of the selected. Do it secretively, and use whatever means possible. If anyone has so much as gotten into a squabble in grade school, I want them gone.
Calm again, he sat beside Mom.
I unconditionally insist that Burke leaves. That's not up for debate.
But what about Fox? Mom asked. It sounds like he didn't really instigate anything. Dad shook his head.
I don't know. The idea of letting anyone involved stay seems like very poor judgment.
Mom leaned her head on Dad's shoulder. Once upon a time, I was involved in a fight during the selection, and you let me stay. Imagine how things would have been if you hadn't.
Mom, you got into a fight? I asked, dumbfounded.
It's true,
Dad confirmed, sighing.
Mom smiled.
I actually still think about the other girl often. She turned out to be quite lovely.
Dad huffed, his tone begrudging.
Fine. Fox can stay. But only if Edlin thinks he might be someone she'd have a chance at happiness with.
Their eyes settled on me, and I was confused about so many things at once. I felt positive it read on my face. I turned to the guard.
Thank you for your update. Have Burke escorted from the premises, and tell Fox I'll speak with him shortly. You can go now. Once he left the room, I rose from my chair, trying to compose my thoughts. I'm not going to ask about that fight, though for the life of me, I cannot figure out why the two of you have withheld so much about your selection from me, and have only decided to share some of the bigger bits and pieces now, and after I've faced something you've already experienced. They sat there guiltily. Mom met you before she was supposed to? I accused, pointing to Dad. Your candidates were all planted by your father. Maybe you could have given me a heads up about how to deal with a fight 2 weeks ago. I crossed my arms, exhausted. I promised you 3 months, and I'm going to give you that, I said, taking in their worried expressions. I'll go on dates, I'll let people take pictures so we have something to print in the papers and to talk about on the report. But you two seem to think that if I stick this out, I'm magically going to fall in love. I stood there, shaking my head. That's not going to happen. Not for me. It could, Mom whispered tenderly. I know I'm disappointing you, but it's not what I want. And these boys are fine, but some of them make me uncomfortable, and I don't think they can handle the pressure of this position. I'm not going to handcuff myself to a weight for the sake of a distracting headline. Dad stood.
Edelyn, that's not what we want either.
Then please. I raised my hands in front of me, guarding myself. Stop pressuring me to fall for people I never wanted here in the first place. I clasped my hands together. This whole situation has been awful. I've had people throw food at me in public. Others have judged me over a kiss. One boy touched me against my will, and another flung me to the ground. For all the effort I put in to make things right, the papers have had a field day with the constant shame. They exchanged a concerned glance. When I said I'd help distract people, I didn't think it would be this degrading.
Sweetheart, we were never trying to hurt you.
Mom looked heartbroken, close to tears. I know, and I'm not mad. I just want my freedom. If this is what I have to do in order to get that, then I will. If you want your distraction, I'll deliver. But please, don't place all those expectations on me. I don't want to let you down any more than I have already. Chapter 25. I knocked on Fox's door, kind of hoping he wouldn't answer. It had been a draining night, and I wanted to go hide under my blankets. Of course, his butler opened the door and pulled it so far back that Fox saw me before I could be announced. He looked as bad as I'd been told. One eye was swollen and surrounded by varying shades of purple, and the opposite side of his head was covered in a bandage, as well as the knuckles across his right hand. Edelyn, he said, hopping up off his bed, then wincing and grabbing his ribs.
Sorry, I meant Your Highness.
You can go, I said hurriedly to the butler as I rushed over to Fox. Sit, I urged. Shouldn't you still be in the hospital wing? He shook his head as he settled down again.
I've been medicated, and they thought I'd rest better in my own room.
How are you feeling? I asked, though I could tell he was in pain.
Besides the bruises? He asked. Humiliated?
Can I join you? I asked, pointing to the spot beside him on the edge of the bed.
Of course.
I sat, not sure where to start. I didn't want to send him home now, partly out of charity. I peeked at Burke's and Fox's applications before going to see Dad, and Fox had actually hinted a lot about his home life on his form. Typically, I was looking for mutual interests or things we could talk about, so I'd missed some important details about him. Living in Clermont, he worked as a lifeguard at the beach, which explained the sun-kissed skin and overly blonde hair. I got the feeling that it wasn't paying enough to support the rest of his family, though that situation was a little unclear on paper. His mother wasn't living at home, but I didn't know if that meant she had passed or not. I could also see his father was terminally ill, so I doubted he was contributing to the finances. Furthermore, if I'd paid attention at all, I would have noticed how much fuller his cheeks looked compared to the picture on his form now that he was getting fed properly. I wanted him to stay. I wanted him to keep his stipend. I wanted him to steal some of the things from his room when he left and sell them when he got home. But asking him to stay meant giving him hope.
"Listen," he started. "I understand if you have to send me home. I do. I don't want to leave, but I know the rules. I don't want to leave with you thinking I'm like Burke or Jack. Try not to think poorly of me when I go, okay?"
"I won't. I don't." Fox looked over and gave me a sad grin.
"I never got to tell you so many things, like how I wish I could command a room like you. It's so impressive. Or how your eyes sparkle when you make a joke. It's really pretty."
"Do they do that? Wait, do I make jokes?" He chuckled.
"Yeah, I mean, they're mostly subtle, but you give it away with your eyes. And I can see how pleased you are when you're teasing us, like at the quiz the other day."
I smiled. That was fun. Tonight was fun too, up until the end.
"I'll never forget your face when you bit into that asparagus."
I pressed my lips together, pretty sure that his expression and mine had been similar. What made it better was that I knew how hard he'd tried, and he still wasn't upset over it. The only thing hurting him now was this worry that I'd remember him as something less than a gentleman. "Fox, I'm going to ask you some questions, and I need you to be completely honest with me. If I think you're lying at all, that's it. You'll be gone within the hour." He swallowed, the silliness of the last few moments fading from his face.
"You have my word."
I nodded, believing him. "All right. Would you tell me about your dad?" He huffed, clearly not expecting the conversation to head in this direction.
"He's sick, which I guess you know. He's got cancer. He's still functioning pretty well, like he's working, but it's only part-time right now. He needs a lot of sleep. When he got sick, my mom left, so I really don't want to talk about her, if that's okay."
"That's okay." He looked at the floor as he continued.
"I've got a brother and a sister, and they go on and on about her like she's coming back. But I know that's not happening. If she did, then I'd leave."
"We really don't have to talk about her, Fox."
"Sorry. You know, I thought the hardest part about coming here would be the distance. But what's so bad it almost hurts is seeing you with your family."
He scratched at his hair with his good hand.
"Your parents are still in love, and your brothers look at you like you're heaven on earth. And I wish I had that. I don't have anything close."
I put a hand on his back. "We're not perfect, I promise. And it sounds like you and your dad have something special."
"We do."
He glanced over at me.
"I didn't mean to get like that. I don't talk about my family a lot."
"That's fine. I have other questions." He sat up straight again, and I could see the pain of the action. I pulled my hand away and rolled my eyes. "Actually, I just realized this might be a hard one too." He smiled.
"Go ahead anyway."
"Okay. Did you come here for me or to get away from them?" Fox paused, his eyes dead set on mine.
"Both? I love my dad. I can't tell you how much he means to me. And I don't mind taking care of him, really. But it's also kind of tiring. It's been like a holiday here most of the time. I also think my brother and sister are starting to appreciate what I do, which is validating in a way. And then there's you."
He shook his head.
"Look, you know I live paycheck to paycheck, and I come from a broken family.
I realize I'm nothing special, he said, placing his hand on his chest. And he suddenly got shy. But you know, I've watched you my whole life, and I've always thought you were so sharp and beautiful. I don't know if I stand the smallest chance of getting to be with you, but I had to at least put my name in. I don't know, I just thought if I could get here, I'd find a way to show you that I could be worth taking a chance on. And then I got in a fight. He shrugged. So I guess that's how it ends.
I hated the disappointment in his voice. I didn't want to care. I knew that letting him get closer to me would end badly. I couldn't explain why I knew, but I was sure that if I allowed any of these boys to cross into a certain level of intimacy, it would be disastrous. So why couldn't I keep them from getting closer? I have another question.
Sure,
he replied, defeated. What's it like to work on the beach all day? He didn't try to fight the smile.
It's wonderful. There's something kind of fascinating about the ocean. It's almost like it has different moods on different days. Like, sometimes the water is so still and other times it's wild. And I'm so glad Angelus is warm all the time, or I don't think I could have handled it.
I love the weather here too, but I don't get to go to the beach very often. Mom and Dad don't like it, and people end up swarming Aaron and me if we go just the two of us. It's kind of a pain. He poked me gently.
If you ever come to Clermont, look me up. You can rent a private beach and swim and lounge to your heart's content.
I sighed dreamily. That sounds perfect.
I'm serious. It's the least I could do.
I looked at my hands and back to Fox's hopeful face.
How about this? If you make it to, say, the top three, we can go out there together and rent a beach, and maybe I could meet your dad.
His face froze in shock as he understood what that meant.
I'm not going home?
Tonight wasn't your fault, and I appreciate you being honest about your motivations. So how about you stay a little longer, and we'll see how it goes.
I'd love that.
All right, then. I stood, feeling so many things. Before tonight, Fox was hardly a draw for me. And now, I was looking forward to seeing him around the palace. Forgive me for dashing off, but there's a lot to take care of before the morning.
I can imagine, he said, walking beside me to the door. Thank you, Your Highness, for giving me a chance.
That's all you wanted, right? I smiled. And you really can call me Edlin. He grinned and used his good hand to pick up mine. He placed the gentlest kiss across the ridges of my fingers.
Good night, Edlin. And thank you again.
I gave him a quick nod before I scurried from the room. That was one issue taken care of. But tomorrow there would be 1,000 more. The photographer had done such a remarkable job of blending into the background, I didn't realize she was still there when the fight broke out. Burke and Fox were front page news, and the headline proclaimed that the first was ejected, while the second was spared. There were other pictures too, me standing next to Kyle, grinding saffron, and again beside Eric as he translated something to Henry. But they were all overshadowed by the animalistic rage on Burke's face as he threw himself at Fox. I bypassed that photo for the smaller ones with the others, tearing them out to save. I wasn't sure why. I ended up tucking them into the drawer next to Kyle's catastrophe of a tie. I walked into breakfast, feeling the weight of everyone's stares. Typically, that wasn't an issue for me, but between all the boys being over-curious about the fight and my parents' worried eyes, I was buried beneath all the unspoken words. I wondered if maybe I'd said too much last night, or if it had come off as me accusing them. I meant to explain how hurtful and draining this process had been, not to blame them for it. Still, as little as I wanted to participate, I knew I'd done what I'd promised. Burke's fist had overshadowed everything else in the country, at least for today.
What happened? Caden whispered. Nothing. Liar. Mom and Dad have been messed up all morning.
I peeked over. Dad kept rubbing the spot over his eyebrow, and Mom was trying to fool everyone by moving the food around her plate. I sighed. It's grown-up stuff. You wouldn't understand. He rolled his eyes.
Don't talk to me like that, Edlin. I'm 14, not 4. I read all the papers, and I pay attention at the reports. I speak more languages than you, and I'm learning all the things you have without anyone making me do it. Don't act like you're better than me. I'm a prince.
I sighed. Yes, but I will be queen, I corrected, sipping my coffee. I really didn't need this right now.
And your name will be in a history book one day, and some bored 10-year-old will memorize it for a test and then forget all about you. You have a job, just like everybody in the world. Stop acting like it makes you more or less than anyone else.
I was left speechless. Was that what Caden really thought about me? Was that what everyone thought about me? I had intended to be strong today, to show Mom and Dad that I really was going to follow through and prove to the boys that things like last night could not break me. But Caden's words made me, and all my efforts, seem worthless. I stood up to leave, trying to think of what I'd need to grab from the office. I certainly couldn't work there today.
Hey, Edlin, wait up.
It was Kyle, jogging to catch up with me. I hadn't even looked at him when I went into the dining hall this morning. His lip was a little swollen, but he seemed okay otherwise.
Are you all right?
He asked. I nodded my head. Then I shook it. I really don't know. He put his hands on my shoulders.
Everything's okay.
I was so overwhelmed, I pressed my lips into his, knowing that it would make everything else stop for a minute.
Ow!
He cried, backing away. Sorry, I just... He grabbed me by the wrist and swung me into the nearest room, slammed the door, and pushed me against the wall. He kissed me harder than I'd kissed him, apparently not bothered by his lips so much if he knew what was coming.
What's this all about?
He breathed. I don't want to think. Just kiss me. Without a word, Kyle drew me to him, his hands lost in my hair. I grabbed fistfuls of his shirt, holding on to him tightly. And it worked. As we swayed together, everything else stopped mattering for a little while. His lips moved from my mouth and onto my neck. These kisses were different than before. They were aggressive and demanding, pulling all my focus. Without thinking about it, I dragged his shirt upward. He laughed devilishly into my cheek.
Okay, if clothes are coming off, we really ought to go to a room. And you should probably know my middle name.
Is it Ashton? Arthur? I feel like it starts with an A.
Not even close.
I sighed, letting go of his clothes. Fine. He leaned back, his arms still around my waist, smirking at me.
Are you all right? I know last night was kind of scary.
I just didn't expect it. It was asparagus. He literally punched someone over a vegetable. Kyle laughed.
See, this is why you stick with butter.
Oh, you and your stupid butter. I shook my head, tracing a finger down his chest. I'm really sorry about your lip. Does anything else hurt?
My stomach. He elbowed me a few times trying to get free, but I'm surprised I didn't get it worse. Henry's eye looks painful. Glad he didn't get hit an inch lower.
I grimaced, thinking about how bad it could have been. Kyle, would you have kicked them both out if you were in my position?
I think I would have even had to consider Henry and me if I were you,
he replied. But you both tried to stop it. He raised a finger.
True. You know that because you were there, but the others have seen the papers, and the pictures make it look like we were all involved.
So keeping Fox, Henry, and you makes it seem as if you got away with something.
And that maybe others could, too.
This day just gets worse, I sighed, running my fingers through my hair and propping myself up against the wall.
Is my kissing that bad?
I started laughing, thinking back to the other night in my room. It had seemed so alien when Kyle wanted to talk to me, but I wasn't completely sure why I thought that now. I could have had a new outlet, a new perspective this whole time. Why haven't we really talked before? It's so easy. He shrugged.
You're the one in charge here. What do you think?
I looked down, embarrassed to say it. I think I held Josie against you. The constant imitation drives me crazy.
I think I held the palace against you. It's her parents' fault, not yours. But I lumped you in since you were going to be queen.
I can understand that.
And I know what you mean about Josie, but it's hard for her, growing up in your shadow.
I couldn't deal with adding Josie to the growing list of things I felt guilty about. I straightened my clothes, knowing that going to work would distract me. Let's do something soon. Not a date, just spending some time together. That crooked smile spread across his face.
I'd like that.
He started tucking his shirt back in, and I fought the blush that I could feel on my cheeks. How had I gotten so out of control?
And listen, he said, don't let this stuff get you down. You're bigger than this election.
Thanks, Kyle. I kissed his cheek and left, heading to my room. I remembered how angry I was when I saw his name come up the day of the drawing, like I was being cheated somehow. Now, I didn't care how that form ended up in the pile. I was just glad it did. I hoped that he felt the same way. Chapter 26. Tonight was going to be a challenge. Yes, the pictures with Ian looked fantastic in print, and yes, the little game show clips came off as charming. But I wondered if Gavril would feel obligated to ask about Jack's and Burke's dismissals instead of focusing on the remaining candidates. What was worse was that I wasn't sure I had much to tell about the boys as it was. Dad was entering his security sweep, so unless the guards moved quickly, I wouldn't have any dates this week, meaning nothing to share on next week's report. Tonight had to matter, and I wasn't sure how to do it. I couldn't shake the feeling that something was off, like I was missing some key piece of information that would make the selection process better. It wasn't an absolute disaster in my eyes, if only because I got to know Kyle, Henry, Hale, and Fox. But as far as the public knew, nearly everything was going down in flames. Even though I'd only glanced at the paper that day for a millisecond, I remembered the way I looked shrinking down on the parade float. Worse than that, I could still see people on the sidelines pointing and laughing. We'd kicked out two candidates this week alone for misconduct, and in their wake, every romantic gesture had been completely overshadowed. It looked so, so bad. I sat in my room sketching, trying to organize my thoughts. There had to be a way to spin this, to turn it into something good. My pencil zipped across the page, and it felt like each time a line straightened out, so did a problem. I'd probably have to skip talking about my previous dates this week. Bringing up one would require me to bring up them all, and I didn't want to rehash Jack's hands on me. But maybe, instead of events, I could talk about what I knew of the boys. There was enough to praise, and if I came across as enamored by their talents, it would make sense to be confused about who to choose. It wasn't that the selection was falling apart, it was that there were too many good choices. By the time I had a plan, I also had a beautiful design. The dress came up into a halter, was very fitted, and ended mid-thigh. Over it, I drew a sheer, long bubble of a skirt that made it look modest. The colors I'd used, a burgundy for the dress and a golden brown for the overskirt, gave it a delicious autumnal feeling. I could imagine how I'd style my hair with it. I even knew what jewelry would look best. As I looked at it, though, I knew this gown was more suited for a starlet than a princess. In my eyes, it was gorgeous without end. But I worried about other people's opinions. More than any other season of my life, they really mattered now.
Oh, miss,
Nina said, catching a glimpse of the drawing in passing.
You like it? It's the most glamorous thing I've ever seen.
I stared at the gown. Do you think I could get away with wearing this on the report? She made a face as if I should already know.
You're basically covered from head to toe, and as long as you don't plan on coating it in rhinestones, I don't see why not.
I petted the paper like I could almost really touch it.
Should I get started?
Nina asked, a hint of excitement in her voice.
Actually, could you take me down to the workroom? I think I'd like to help make this one. I want it for tonight.
I'd be thrilled, Nina said. I grabbed my book and followed her into the hallway, more excited than I'd ever been. It was worth the marathon of cutting and sewing when I walked in for the report, and the first thing I saw was the out-and-out envy in Josie's eyes. I'd worn a pair of golden heels and curled my hair so it fell loosely over my shoulders, and it was possibly the most beautiful I'd ever felt. The blatant stares from the selected only confirmed I was particularly lovely tonight, and I was so bewildered I had to turn my back on them to suppress my grin. It was then that I felt something was off. There was a pang of tension that seemed to be floating through the room, and it was far more powerful than the pride over my dress or the sense of admiration coming from the boys. It was so weighty, it nearly gave me a chill. I looked around, searching for a clue. Mom and Dad were in a corner, trying to be discreet. I could tell by Dad's tensed brow and Mom's gestures that something was wrong. What I wasn't sure of was if I could go talk to them. Was a few days of silence enough?
Hey.
Baden had snuck up on me.
Hi.
Did I startle you?
I focused politely. No, I'm fine. A little lost in thought. Do you need something?
Well, I was wondering if I could invite you out for dinner or something this week. Maybe another jam session.
He strummed an invisible guitar, biting his smiling lip. That's sweet, but traditionally I'm supposed to do the asking. He shrugged.
So, didn't that cooking thing happen because those guys invited you?
I squinted, trying to remember. Maybe, technically.
So, since I didn't grow up in the palace, I can't ask, but Kyle can?
I assure you, Kyle has less of an advantage than you'd imagine. I answered with a laugh, thinking of all the years of frustration. Baden stood there, silent and unbelieving.
Sure.
I was completely shocked when he walked away, hands in his pocket and footsteps steady. Had I done something rude? I was being honest, and I hadn't actually turned him down. I tried to shake off the snub, focusing on my duty for the evening, being charming and gracious, and trying to convince everyone that I was falling in love. Dad passed me, and I gently grabbed his arm. What's wrong? He shook his head and patted my hand.
Nothing, darling.
The lie shook me more than Baden's dismissal. People whirred around the room, giving commands and checking notes. I heard Josie laugh, and someone shushed her immediately after. The boys talked to one another, all a little too loud to be considered appropriate. Baden was sulking next to Henry, ignoring everyone, and I pressed my hands to my stomach, calming myself. Next to Henry, just off stage in the dark, I saw a waving hand. It was Eric, standing on the sideline, waiting to take his hidden seat. Once he had my attention, he gave me a thumbs up, but the expression on his face let me know it was a question. I shrugged. He pressed his lips together, then mouthed the word sorry. I gave him a tight smile and a thumbs up back, which wasn't quite right, but was the only thing I could do. Eric shook his head at me, and I was strangely comforted. At least someone seemed to understand how I was feeling. Taking a deep breath, I went over to sit between Mom and Aaron. "Something's wrong," I whispered to him.
"I know."
"Do you know what it is?"
"Yes."
"Will you tell me?"
"Later."
I sighed. How was I supposed to perform with worry hanging over my head? The updates were dispensed, and Daddy spoke briefly, though I couldn't concentrate on anything he was saying. All I could see were the lines of stress around his eyes, the way his shoulders wore the strain of whatever was troubling him. Partway through, Gavril stepped toward the middle of the set and announced that he had a few questions for the selected, and I watched them all straighten their ties or cuffs and move into more assertive stances in their chairs.
"So, let's see. Sir Ivan."
On the near side of the first row, Ivan raised his hand, and Gavril faced him.
"How are you enjoying the selection so far?"
He chuckled.
"I'd be enjoying it more if I could manage to get to see the princess one-on-one."
Ivan winked at me, and I felt my face set on fire.
"I imagine the princess has a hard time getting to everyone,"
Gavril said graciously.
"For sure, I'm not complaining, just being hopeful,"
he added, still chortling like this was all a joke.
"Well, maybe you can impress her Royal Highness tonight and sway her into making time for you. Tell us, what do you think the most important job of a future prince would be?"
Ivan's laughing stopped.
"I don't know. I think just being good company is important. Princess Edelin is forced into lots of relationships for work, and I think it would be nice to be one of the people she always wanted to be around, just for, you know, fun."
I tried not to roll my eyes. "You are a forced relationship, honey."
"Interesting,"
Gavril commented.
"What about you, Sir Gunner?"
Gunner was a bit on the short side, and he looked almost petite sitting beside the gangly Ivan. He tried to straighten himself, but it was no use.
"I think any future prince should be prepared to be available. You've already mentioned the princess's busy schedule, so anyone in her life should try to put himself in a position to be helpful. Of course, I don't know what that looks like yet, but it's important to think of how your life and priorities might change."
Gavril made an approving face, and Dad clapped, which led others to follow. I joined in, but it felt strange. This was a legitimate question, and I wasn't sure I liked it being turned into entertainment.
"Sir Kyle, you've lived in the palace your whole life," Gavril said, walking across the stage. "How do you think your life might change were you to become prince?" "I definitely need to focus more on my hygiene."
"Huh." I covered my mouth, so embarrassed, but I couldn't stop laughing.
"Oh, sounds like someone over there agrees."
Behind Kyle, Henry belatedly joined in the laughter. Of course, he'd heard the comment on a delay. Gavril noticed him and moved back.
"Sir Henry, yes?"
Henry nodded, but I could see the pure terror in his eyes.
"What's your opinion on all this? What do you think a future prince's most important role might be?"
He tried not to let his fear show as he leaned to the side to hear Eric. Once he understood, he nodded.
Yes. The prince should being for Princess M.
I stood. I couldn't bear it. "Henry," I called. All eyes turned to me, and I waved him over to come join me in the middle of the set. He carefully came down from his seat. "And Eric, you too." Henry waited for his friend to come around from behind the set. Eric looked nervous, not prepared to be in the spotlight. But Henry mumbled something to him with a smile, and he eased as they found their way with Gavril to the front. I linked my arm around Henry's, and Eric stood just behind him, going into shadow mode. "Gavril, Sir Henry was raised in Swendway. His first language is Finnish, so he requires a translator." I motioned to Eric, who gave a quick bow, ready to go back into obscurity. I'm sure Henry would be happy to answer your question, but I think it would be much easier without Eric hiding behind the risers. Henry smiled as Eric conveyed all this to him, and I felt strangely proud when he reached across and gently squeezed my arm. Pausing to collect himself, Henry gave his answer. I could see he was thinking about his words, and even though he'd been thrown off, he was deliberate as he spoke. Finally, he came to a finish and all eyes fell on Eric. He says that any future prince should remember that it isn't simply one role to fill, but several. Husband, consultant, friend, and dozens more. He would need to be prepared to study and work as hard as Her Highness, and be ready to set his ego aside to serve. Eric put his hands behind his back, and I could see he was trying to remember the last of Henry's words. And he would also need to understand that there is a weight she carries, that he never could, and be ready to sometimes just be a clown. I giggled, happy to see Henry's huge smile when Eric was done. The entire room erupted in applause, and I got up on tiptoes to whisper in his ear. Good, good. He beamed.
Good, good?
I nodded.
Your Highness, this is an extraordinary complication in the selection process,
Gavril gasped.
How do you manage?
Right now with two things, patience and Eric. There was a smattering of laughter across the room.
But how could this work? At some point, it would have to change.
This was the first time in my life that I'd ever wanted to run over, grab my chair, and fling it across the room at Gavril Fiday. Yes, probably, but there are certainly worse things than a language barrier.
Could you give us some examples?
I motioned for Henry and Eric to go sit down, and worked very hard not to laugh at how quickly Eric moved. Henry gave me an affectionate smile as he left, and that inspired me. Well, since this began with Henry, let me use him as an example. We have to work hard to communicate, but he's an incredibly kind person, whereas Jack and Burke spoke perfect English, but behaved rather poorly.
Yes, we all saw the story of Burke's fight, and let me say, I'm happy to see you were unharmed by that outburst.
Uninjured, sure. Unharmed? That was questionable. But no one would want to hear about that. Yes, but they seem to be the exception, not the rule. There are so many candidates I could brag about.
Oh, well, don't let me stop you.
I smiled and peeked back to the boys. Sir Hale has incredible taste and works as a tailor. I would not be surprised to see all of Ilya covered in his designs one day.
I love that dress,
he called. I made it, I yelled back, unable to contain my pride.
Perfection.
See, I said, turning back to Gavril. Told you he had good taste. I looked around again. Of course, I've already mentioned Sir Badin's musical skills, but they're worth bringing up again. He's so talented. Badin gave a quick nod, and if he was still irritated, he was covering it well. Sir Henry, I've discovered, is an amazing cook, and it takes a lot to impress me in that department, because as you know, the palace chefs could rival anyone in the world, so trust me when I say you're jealous of me because I've gotten to taste his food. More laughter filled the studio, and I caught a glimpse of Dad in a monitor looking so, so delighted. Sir Fox, now, some might not be aware of what a valuable skill this is, but he has the ability to make the best out of any situation. The selection can be stressful, and yet he is always looking at the bright side. He's a pleasure to be around. I shared a gaze with Fox, and even with the gash on his head and his bruised eye showing slightly through the makeup, he looked as far from menacing as possible. I was glad I'd let him stay.
Anyone else?
Gavril questioned, and I scanned the boys. Yes, there was one more.
Most people have a hard time believing that I don't know Sir Kyle backward and forward, because we've lived in the same place our whole lives. But it's true. The selection has allowed me to get to know him much better, and I've now learned that he's a very promising architect. If we ever needed a second palace built, he's the first person I'd call. There were some sweet sighs around the room at the idea of childhood friends finally becoming possible lovers. Although, I can confirm he needs help in the hygiene department, I added, sending the room into laughs again.
It sounds like these are some truly amazing young men,
Gavril called, beginning another round of applause for them. Absolutely.
So, if you're so impressed, I have to ask, has anyone got a special place in your heart just yet?
I found myself fiddling with my hair. I don't know.
Oh-ho!
I giggled, looking down. This wasn't real, was it?
Does it happen to be anyone you mentioned?
I slapped his arm playfully. Oh my gosh, Gavril! He snickered, as did most of the room. I fanned myself with a hand and turned back to him. The truth is, it's still difficult to talk about this so publicly, but I'm hoping to have more to say in the future.
That's wonderful news, Your Highness. Let me join all of Ilia in wishing you luck as you look for your partner.
Thank you. I nodded my head modestly and casually peeked over at Dad. The expression on his face was one of disbelief, almost as if he was optimistic. It was bittersweet for me to feel so unsure about the whole thing, but to see that even the slightest glimmer of possibility took so much worry out of his eyes. For now, that would be enough. Chapter 27.
It's bad.
I lay on Aaron's bed, curled in a ball while he sat upright, telling me everything Mom and Dad didn't want to. Just say it. He swallowed.
It always seems to start in the poorer provinces. They're not rebelling, not like when Mom and Dad were kids. It's more like they're uprising.
What does that mean exactly?
They're rallying to end the monarchy. No one is getting what they want out of the caste dissolution, and they think we don't care.
Don't care? I asked, astonished. Dad's running himself ragged at trying to fix it. I'm dating strangers for them.
I know, and I have no idea where that performance tonight came from, but that was spectacular.
I made a smart face, acknowledging the praise. But I was starting to question just how much of tonight was planned and how much was genuine.
But even then, what are we supposed to do? Perform forever?
Huh, I scoffed. As if you'd ever be asked to perform. It would always be me, and I can't. I feel like I'm suffocating as it is.
We could all step down, he suggested. But then what would happen? Who would take over? And if we don't step down, will he run us out?
Do you think they'd do that? I breathed. He stared into the distance.
I don't know, Edie. People have done far worse things when they're hungry or tired or unwaveringly poor.
But we can't feed everyone. We can't make everyone earn the same amount of money. What do they want from us?
Nothing, he said honestly. They just want more for themselves. I can't say I blame them, but the people are confused. They think their lives are in our hands, but they're not.
They're in their own.
Exactly.
We sat in silence for a long time, considering what this meant for us. Truthfully, though, I knew it would hit me harder than anyone else if the people followed through on this. I didn't know how things like this happened, but governments changed. Kingdoms rose and fell. Entire ideologies took over, shoving others to the side. Could I be brushed into the gutter? I shivered, trying to imagine a life like that. They already threw food at me, I murmured.
What?
I've been so stupid, I answered, shaking my head. I've grown up believing that I was adored,
but the people don't love me. Once Mom and Dad step down, I can't imagine there would be anything preventing the country from getting rid of me. It was a tangible thing, like I was being held aloft by this idea, and now that I knew it was a lie, my body felt heavier. Aaron's face grew worried. I waited for him to contradict me, but he couldn't.
You can make them love you, Edlin.
I'm not as charming as you, or as clever as Caden, or as adorably rambunctious as Austin. There's nothing that special about me. He whacked his head on his headboard as he groaned.
Edlin, you're joking, right? You're the first female heir. You're unlike anything this country has ever known. You just have to learn how to use that, to remind them who you are.
I'm Edlin Shreve, and no one in the world is as powerful as me. I don't think they'd like me if they knew who I really was.
If you're going to whine, I'll kick you out.
I'll have you flogged.
You've been threatening me with that since we were six.
One day it'll happen. Heed my warning. He chuckled.
Don't worry, Edie. The chances of people organizing enough to do anything are slim. They're venting. Once they get this out of their system, things will go back to normal. You'll see.
I nodded and sighed. Maybe I was fretting for nothing. But I could still hear the hateful yelling during the parade, and I could still see the hateful remarks from my kiss with Kyle. This certainly wouldn't be the last we heard about abolishing the monarchy. Don't tell Mom and Dad I know, okay?
If you insist.
I hopped up and kissed Aaron's cheek. I felt bad for girls who didn't have brothers. See you tomorrow. He grinned.
Get some sleep.
I left his room with every intention of going back to mine, but as I walked, I realized I was hungry. Now that I'd been to the kitchens, I kind of liked it down there. I remembered seeing some fruit, and there was cheese in the refrigerator. Certainly it was late enough that it couldn't bother anyone, so I trotted down the back stairs. I was wrong in assuming that it would be completely empty. There were a handful of young men and women rolling out dough and chopping vegetables. I took it all in for a moment, entranced by how efficient and driven they were. I loved that, in spite of the hour, they all seemed alert and happy, chatting with one another as they went about their work. They were so interesting that it took several moments for me to notice the head of floppy blonde curls in the back corner of the room. Henry had hung his shirt on a hook, and his blue undershirt was covered in flour. I moved quietly, but as the staff recognized me, they curtsied and bowed as I passed, alerting Henry to my presence. When he saw me, he tried to brush the mess off himself, failing completely. He pushed back his hair and turned to me, smiling as always. No, Eric?
He sleep.
Why aren't you asleep? He squinted, trying to piece together the words.
Sorry, I cook?
I nodded. Can I cook too? He pointed to the pile of apples and dough on the table.
You want? You cook?
Yes. He beamed and nodded. Then, giving me a once-over, he paused before grabbing his dress shirt and wrapping it around me, tying the sleeves together in the back. An apron. He wanted me to have an apron. I smiled to myself. It was only a nightgown, after all. But there weren't enough words between the two of us to argue over it. He picked up an apple and took the peel off in one long strip. When he was done, he set it on the counter and picked up a different knife.
Pida vietsi nine,
he said, pointing to the way his fingers held the handle.
Pida omina huolilesesti.
He turned his other hand into a claw, tucking his fingers away as he held the apple. Then he started cutting. Even with my inexperienced eyes, I could see how he was using the minimum amount of force to do his work, and how his simple stance protected his hands.
You?
He said, passing me the knife.
Okay. Like this? I curled my hand up like he had. Good, good. I wasn't nearly as fast as he was, and my slices weren't half as uniform. But by the way he grinned, you'd have thought I made an entire feast by myself. He worked with the dough and mixed cinnamon and sugar and prepped one of the fryers along the wall. I wondered if he was in charge of desserts at home or if they were simply his favorite. I helped toss the apples and stuff the dough, and though I was terrified of the hot oil, I did sink one of the baskets. I squealed when the oil came alive, popping and dancing all over the place. Henry only laughed at me a little, which was kind. When he finally placed the tray in front of me, I was dying of hunger and nearly too excited to wait. But I did, and he gestured that I should try. So I plucked up one of the fritter donut pastry things and bit in. Oh, it was heaven, even better than the rolls he'd made the other day. Oh, yum, I exclaimed as I chewed. He broke into a laugh and picked one up himself. He seemed pretty satisfied, but I could see in his eyes he was evaluating what he'd made. I thought they were perfect. What are these called? Name. I pointed to the food. Oh, omenolortzi. Omenolortzi? Good. Yeah? Good. I smiled to myself. I'd have to tell Caden I was seriously mastering the names of several Swedish desserts. I ate too, feeling a little sick once I was done. And then I watched as Henry passed the plate around to the cooks, who all praised his skills. In the deepest core of myself, I hated that he didn't understand the words they were using. Delectable, flawless, perfection. I got the sense that if he had understood, he'd have said they were being too generous. It was hard to be sure, though. That was just my assumption about who he was. I really didn't know. And, I reminded myself, you don't want to. There were times when it was getting harder and harder to remember that. When Henry finished his rounds and the plate came back with hardly a crumb left, I gave him a shy smile. I should sleep. You sleep. Yes. Good, good. Tonight? The report? I asked, trying to keep things simple. He nodded. Report, yes. I placed my hand on his chest. You are so sweet. Sweet. The sugar? I laughed. Yes, like sugar. He brought his hand up to cover mine as it was still pressed against his heart. His smile dwindled as he looked at me and swallowed. He shrugged as he held me there, seeming only to want to make the moment last. He held my hand for the longest time, and I could see he was sorting through words in his head, trying so, so hard to find one that he knew I might understand. But there was nothing. I wanted Henry to know that I saw what he felt. I could tell in every smile and every gesture that he really cared about me. And despite my best efforts, I cared about him too. I worried about how much I would regret it, but there was only one way to express that feeling. I closed the distance between us and placed a hand on his cheek. He stared into my eyes as if he'd discovered something truly valuable, something rare that he might never see again. I nodded slowly, and he lowered his lips to mine. Henry was scared. I could feel it. He was afraid to touch me, afraid to hold me, afraid to move. I didn't know if it was because I was a princess or because he'd never done this before. But that kiss was so vulnerable. That made me love it even more. I pressed my lips into his, trying to tell him without words that this was okay
that I wanted him to hold me. And finally, after a moment of hesitation, he responded. Henry held me like I was delicate, like if his grip was too tight, I'd crumble. And his kisses were the same way. Only now, instead of being driven by fear, they were motivated by what felt like reverence. It was an affection almost too beautiful to endure. I pulled away, slightly dizzy from the kiss, noting that his eyes looked pained, but he wore the tiniest smile. "I should go," I said again. He nodded. "Good night."
"Good night."
I moved slowly until I was out of his sight. Then I ran. My head was swimming with thoughts that I didn't understand. Why did it bother me so much when Gavril picked at Henry? Why did I have to keep Fox when he should have left? Why did Kyle, for goodness sake, Kyle, keep popping into my mind? And why was it so terrifying even to ask those questions? When I got to my room, I flung myself into bed, feeling disoriented. As angry as I was at Gavril for bringing it up, it did bother me that I couldn't speak to Henry, that I couldn't communicate anything intimate to him because of how uncomfortable it would be to go through Eric. As unnerved as the thought made me, if I was going to tell anyone something personal, it would probably be Henry. I felt safe around him, and I knew he was smart, and I admired his passion. Henry was good. But I didn't speak Finnish, and that was bad. I rolled over onto my back in frustration, yelping when something dug into my spine. Reaching around, I felt that it was a knot. I was still wearing Henry's shirt. I untied it, and despite how absurd it was, pulled it up to my nose. Of course, he smelled like cinnamon and honey and vanilla. Of course he smelled like dessert. Stupid Swedish baker with his stupid spices. Ah, this was making me asinine. This was why love was a terrible idea. It made you weak. And there was no one in the world as powerful as me. Chapter 28. At breakfast, I was struck by a number of things. First was Henry trying to catch Eric up on everything that had happened the night before. Eric's eyes kept darting over to mine, and then back to Henry. And he looked like he was trying to calm him down. I thought for sure Henry would be elated today, as the second person in the selection to get a kiss. Instead, he seemed frantic. Across from Henry, Kyle's confused gaze flipped back and forth between him and Eric, as he clearly didn't know enough words to follow even a fraction of the conversation. He slowly spooned food into his mouth, without trying to interject. I also noticed that Baden was trying to get my attention. He gave me a small wave and nodded toward the door. I mouthed, "Later," and did my best not to be irritated by him neglecting protocol again. But the worst by far were Mom and Dad surreptitiously peeking over at me, obviously wondering how much I knew about the uprising. I cleared my throat. "So, did I do okay last night?" Dad's face finally broke into a smile.
"I was impressed, Edlin. After such a trying week, you were incredibly poised. When Henry got up there, and you were so generous with him, it was a wonderful thing to watch. And I'm happy to see that maybe some of them are appealing to you. Gives me hope."
"We'll see where that goes," I hedged. "But I did promise you 3 months, and I think it will take me at least that long to figure any of this out."
"I know exactly what you mean," he said,
looking as if 1,000 memories were flooding his head.
"Thank you."
"You're welcome." I watched his sweet, wistful smile, and I could see how much this whole thing meant to him. "Will you be disappointed if I get to the end and there's no engagement?"
"No, dear.
I won't be disappointed.
He only barely accented the word, but it sent me into a sudden tailspin of worry. What would it mean for me when I got to the end and was still single? If we weren't just dealing with post-caste confusion anymore, and trying to quell an outright rebellion, 3 months wasn't enough to fix this. In fact, 2 weeks had already disappeared in a rush. This wasn't going to be enough. And then I understood why they might want to keep any hint of unrest from me. If I thought this was completely pointless, would I quit? If I quit, then there really was nothing. "Don't worry, Daddy," I said. "It's all going to be fine." He put his hand over mine and gave it a squeeze.
"I'm sure you're right, dear."
Then, taking a deep breath, he went back to his coffee.
"I meant to tell you, the background checks are done. If we had made a few calls before the selection, we would have known that Burke had anger issues and that a girl at Jack's school reported him for inappropriate behavior once. It also turns out Ian spends almost all his time alone. I don't think that's anything worth sending him home for, but we should watch him."
"Ian's actually been pretty generous."
"Oh?"
"Yeah, but I have noticed he's a bit of a loner. Not sure why, though. He's a good conversationalist." Dad sipped his coffee and stared at Ian.
"That's strange."
"Anyone else I need to worry about?" I asked, not wanting him to linger on Ian. Isolated didn't mean troublemaker.
"There was one who had some bad grades, but nothing to kick up a fuss about."
"All right, then. The worst has passed." I tried to look encouraging.
"I certainly hope so. I'm going to have a special team continue to look into this. I wasn't as diligent as I should have been, and I'm sorry for that," he confessed.
"But on the plus side, I could have actual dates to talk about next Friday." He chuckled to himself.
"True. So, maybe give someone you haven't talked to yet a chance. I promise, it is actually possible to meet with all of them."
I surveyed the mass of boys. "I might not be in the office this week." He shook his head.
"Not a problem. Get to know them. I'm still pulling for you to find someone, even if part of you thinks it's pointless."
"I might remind you, that wasn't your goal when you proposed this."
"All the same."
"There are just so many. Anyone you don't like?" He squinted.
"As a matter of fact."
Dad gazed over each of their faces, trying to find one in particular.
"That one. Green shirt."
"Black hair?"
"Yes."
"That's Julian. What's wrong with him?"
"This might sound trivial, but when you were complimenting the others last night, he didn't smile or clap for any of them. Not a good attitude to have. If he can't stand being in their shadows temporarily, how would he handle being in yours for the rest of his life?"
For all the mental time I spent debating how much he honestly believed in me as a leader, that statement made it all a waste. Of course he saw me as a leader.
"And this might also sound trivial, but I don't think you'd make attractive children."
"Daddy!" I yelled, causing a bit of a stir. I buried my head in my hand as Dad doubled over in laughter.
"I'm just saying."
"All right, I'm leaving. Thanks for the insight." I practically bolted from the hall, though I made sure my pace was only slightly faster than what might be considered ladylike. Once I was alone, it turned into an all-out sprint. In my room, I filed through the remaining applications, looking for anything that might make one person more exciting than another. I paused on Julian's picture. Dad was right. No matter how I combined his nose and my eyes or my mouth and his cheeks, every variation looked awful in my head. Not that it mattered. I'd send him home soon enough, but probably only once a few dates went bad and he had company. The solo eliminations had been rather awful. For now, I had to make a plan. 10 dates. That was the goal before I had to face another report. And I'd need to get at least 3 of them in the papers. How could I make them look magnificent? Mom was in the women's room with Miss Lucy, meeting with a mayor. There weren't very many ladies holding down those positions, so I knew them by heart. This was Mila Warren from Calgary, gracing our home today. I hadn't planned on making this an official visit, but now I had no choice. I curtsied, greeting Mom and her guest. "Your Highness," Miss Warren sang, standing to give me a deep curtsy. "It's a pleasure to see you, and during such an exciting time. We're very happy to have you as well, ma'am. Please, sit." "How are you, Edlin?" Mom asked. "Good. I have some questions for you later," I added quietly.
"No doubt a little boy talk, eh?"
Ms. Warren asked with a wink. Mom and Miss Lucy indulged her with a laugh, but while I smiled, I thought she should know the truth. "I don't think the selection is quite what you imagine." She raised her eyebrows.
"Please, give me 35 men fighting over me any day."
"Honestly, it's more work than anything," I promised. "We make it look exciting, but it's challenging."
"I can back that up," Mom said. "No matter what side of the situation you're on, it's hard. There are long hours of nothing happening, followed by bursts of events."
She shook her head.
"Even now, just thinking back on it, I feel tired."
Mom rested her head on her hand and flicked her eyes toward me. There was something in her expression, that motherly, accepting look, that made me feel understood and comforted. But there was the same worry there, the hint of stress that Dad was wearing this morning. She brushed off the moment and focused on Ms. Warren.
"So, Mila, the last I heard, things were going well in Calgary."
"Oh, yes. Well, we're a quiet bunch."
She'd stopped by on little more than a social call, and I sat there holding my perfect posture until she decided to leave, which only happened because I slipped a note to the maid asking that she come in and tell Mom she was needed urgently. The second Ms. Warren was out the door, Mom straightened her dress.
"Let me go see what this is all about."
"Relax. It's just me." I studied my nails. They needed some work. Mom and Miss Lucy stared. "I wanted to talk to you, and she wouldn't stop, so I made an appointment. Sort of." I flashed a cheeky smile. Mom shook her head.
"Edlin, sometimes you can be a little manipulative," she sighed, "and sometimes it's a gift. Ugh, I didn't think I could take much more."
I giggled conspiratorially with her and Miss Lucy, glad I wasn't alone.
"I feel bad for her," Mom said guiltily. "She doesn't get out much, and it's hard to do her job alone. But I didn't appreciate how she spoke to you."
I made a face. "I've had worse."
"True," she swallowed. "What did you need?"
I glanced at Miss Lucy.
"Of course,"
she answered to my unspoken request.
"I'm around all day if you need me."
She curtsied to Mom, kissed me on my head, and left. It was such a tender gesture. "She's so good to me," I said. "The boys, too. Sometimes I feel like I ended up with several mothers." I smiled at Mom and she nodded.
"I kept the people I love close, and they have fawned over you since the moment they knew you were coming."
"I really wish she had children," I said sadly.
"Me too," Mom swallowed. "I guess by now it's common knowledge that she's faced a long struggle with no success. I'd do nearly anything to be able to help her."
"Have you tried?"
I felt like there was little the Shreves couldn't accomplish. Mom blinked a few times, trying not to cry.
"I shouldn't tell you this. It's private. But yes, I've done everything I could. I even went so far as to offer to be a surrogate and carry a baby for her."
She pressed her lips together.
It was the one time I regretted being queen. It appears my body isn't always mine, and there are certain things I'm not allowed to do.
Says who? I demanded.
Everyone, Edlin. It's not exactly a traditional thing to do, and our advisors thought the people would be upset by it. Some even argued that any baby I carried would have to be in line for the throne. It was ridiculous, so I had to let it go.
I was quiet for a minute, watching my mother recover from a heartbreak years old, and one that wasn't even her own in a way.
How do you do that?
What?
It's like you're always giving pieces of yourself away. How do you have anything left for you? I feel exhausted watching you sometimes.
She smiled. When you know who matters most to you, giving things up, even yourself, doesn't really feel like a sacrifice.
There are a handful of people who I'd lay down my life for without a second thought. And then there are the people of Ilia, our subjects, who I lay my life down for in a different way.
She lowered her eyes and touched up her already immaculate dress.
You probably have people you'd sacrifice for and you don't know it, but you will one day.
For a second, I wondered if we were actually related. All the people she was thinking about, Dad, Aaron, Miss Lucy, Aunt May, were important to me, too. But mostly I needed them to help me, not the other way around.
Anyway, she said, what was it that you needed?
Oh, so Dad has deemed that the remaining boys aren't complete lunatics, so I'm focusing on dates this week, I answered, leaning forward. I'm looking for ideas that would be easy but look great on camera.
Ah.
She lifted her eyes to the ceiling in thought.
I'm not sure how useful I can be in that department. Nearly all the dates I had with your father during my selection were walks around the garden.
Seriously? How did you two even get together? That's so boring.
She laughed. Well, it gave us a lot of opportunities to talk. Or to argue. And the majority of our time spent with each other was filled with one or the other.
I squinted.
You guys fought?
All the time.
For some reason, that brought a smile to her face.
Honestly, the more and more I hear about your selection, the less sense it makes. I can't even imagine you and Dad fighting.
I know. There were a lot of things we needed to work through. And truthfully, we liked having someone who'd be honest with us, even when it was hard to take.
It wasn't that I